Casey Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe. I'm here with author T.C. Hale, natural health expert, producer. Oh my God, it's happening again. It's like Groundhog Day.
I think that once you do 100 episodes, you're kind of worn out.
I'm done. Blown my wad. Yeah, done. I tried to hold it together for as long as possible.
This is episode 103.
103, people. Who can believe it? We haven't gotten shut down yet.
It's amazing.
And with us today, we have Will Wolfgang Schmidt's wallet.
Yes.
What is with the George Costanza wallet? That is quite something.
Well, when you're a baller. Wait, what do you mean? What's wrong with it?
It's really big.
Oh, I have a lot of cards. But they're not other people's cards. Not credit. Yeah, that's like cards that people hand
to me. They're not playing cards.
They're not like playing cards. They're not like credit cards. Just like card. I feel bad throwing them away. Like, oh, even though I saved their contact info, I'm like, they're cluttering.
It's impressive. It's something.
Yeah. It's something to behold. Impressive.
We'd also like to say thank you to Audible.com because today all of our listeners can get a free audiobook from Audible.com. Just go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook for the details.
Audible.com.
So today is another Ask Tony.
Ask Tony.
What? Ask Tony. I know what I'm saying.
Yeah, you do.
I know what I'm saying. Ask Tony show.
And I think some of these were email, but some of them we pulled from the group where we found some really good questions in there.
And some sent a message in a bottle.
Yeah, we got some of those too. Sting sent one.
Yeah.
But some of these we changed the name because it wasn't like a thing where we were like, hey, what questions do you have about this topic? They were just questions asking in the group. And so I changed their names so that we're not really just putting them on the radio show without them knowing they did that. So, but we'll email these folks and let them know we used a fake name so they can hear what we talked about with their question.
Cool. And if you haven't liked us yet on Facebook, I don't know what it's going to take
for
you to do so. Come on,
real
people.
Slow.
Pretty soon, it's going to be like we're not even going to be able to allow more people in.
We just started a new page just for the show because we have too many people on the books following show.
Wow.
So you can also go to search for Kick It Naturally.
See, it's catchy.
But we have dual pages now where you can hang out.
Okay. So Kick It in the Nuts is still good?
Yeah,
though?
Yeah.
Okay, still. Kick It in the Nuts. So go there, like us, or go to the dual page.
Kick
It Naturally.
Okay. That's the name of our show that you've done 100 episodes of.
Yeah. That one.
Good job.
Well, I do so many podcasts these days.
So I know.
It's hard to keep up. Yeah. So. All right.
So let's do questions.
Let's see here. Janice. Fake Janice. This is fake. Well, her name is fake. I have a friend who has been told the doctors want to remove her gallbladder because it no longer works. Is there any way to kickstart a gallbladder into working again? Well, that would be bad if they just wanted to remove it because it's still working and they just thought it was fun.
Well, you know, it's interesting, though, because a lot of people say, you hear this a lot, that they'll go to the doctor and the doctor will tell them, well, your gallbladder is not functioning anymore. And that gives the impression that it broke. That it's not able to do its job and move or do the cranks right or squeeze the muscle or whatever it is that a gallbladder would do. And the reality is that it's not working is because it's blocked and it's backed up and nothing can flow through it. So that's how it works, is that the liver sends bile to the gallbladder. It's concentrated there. And then it gets squirted down into the duodenum. So that's how its functioning works. So when that can't flow anymore because there's too many gallstones in there or the bile has become too thick, and then it's all of a sudden, quote unquote, won't function anymore. So we find that we hear from people all the time that have been told that, but then once they can allow that stuff to start flowing, then all of a sudden the batteries magically come back on and their gallbladder works again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You're okay with
that? I think
we're
done on
that one. Yeah, no. I mean, you can think about it like a clogged drain. It's not a perfect metaphor, but if you had a drain that was clogged,
I think it's a perfect metaphor.
Okay. You wouldn't just throw out the drain.
Yeah, like,
I can't
you gotta
use
remove
that anymore.
Remove that pipe. You try to unclog it. before.
It's really good.
You know?
That's good. Write a book on it.
Yeah. Well,
kick
I think
your...
we already
did. Yeah. But, you know, that's a good explanation. It's like if your kitchen sink wasn't clogged up, you wouldn't have a construction team come in and remove the kitchen sink.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you would remove the pipe if it was really bad, but that's not, it's not the kitchen sink's fault.
Yeah.
You can usually do something to get the clog out, and that's what we like to see people do.
I mean, I suppose there could be some kind of situations where, like, maybe there's a dangerous infection that was
Absolutely.
Resulting, that it does make sense to remove the
right.
gallbladder. Like, okay.
If right, it's if like it's gangrene and there's bad things going
right,
on.
Right, that's possible. I'm sure it has happened. But you would, if you can, and you're not in that, like, potentially lethal situation, I would much rather you try, like, take yourself through our digestive issues course and learn some steps you can do, like taking beet flow or beet greens or doing coffee suppositories or even coffee enemas to try to help unclog the drain.
So let's talk about some of those things that someone can do if they're in this situation, because we teach a lot of things that someone can do to improve bile flow if they're having issues that show that bile may not be moving that well. But if someone is in such a severe state that a doctor wants to yank their gallbladder out, we see that they usually have to be pretty aggressive to get this functioning again. Because keep in mind that most of the things we're using are just natural things, and natural things don't work as powerfully as like a drug would. So you might have to be aggressive when you're using something like beet greens, concentrated beet greens like we use in the Beet Flow product that we use a lot. It's really just food, you know. It's not going to go in and hammer everything into the right place. You might have to be aggressive and do it for a little longer than you would a pain pill.
And just like what Will was saying about the clogged sink, I mean, maybe a little liquid plumber might help, but you might need somebody to come in there and pump that stuff out, you
right.
know?
So liquid
you might
plumber,
have to get more aggressive with your tactics.
Right.
You know?
Liquid plumber works great in some cases, but a lot of cases it does nothing. And that's kind of what we see when people need to get bile flowing. And
don't take liquid plumber.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
Don't drink Drano.
Yeah,
that's
don't
not
do
what,
that.
That's
but
not what we're saying.
Maybe consider like a coffee enema or coffee suppositories, because those are pretty powerful chemical agents that they can help dilate the biliary pathway that the bile is not flowing through correctly, and it gives more room for the bile to flow through.
And y'all have Zineplex on naturalreference.com.
Yeah.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about what's the difference between what we're trying to do with Beet Flow and what someone could do with a coffee enema or coffee suppositories. Why is that different?
Yeah, and they work great together, because what needs to happen is the bile needs to be liquidy, and it needs to flow
liquidy
through, yeah, as opposed to crystally sludgy, biliary sludge. So we want it to be fluid, and it needs to flow through a little pathway called the biliary tree. And the biliary tree can get constricted by things like elevated estrogen, like if you're taking birth control. There can be chemical agents that are
causing
it. So
just like our vascular system, we talked in other episodes about how that can be constricted or can expand and open up and allow things to flow easier, or things don't flow so well. Mm-hmm. So the biliary pathway can do the same thing.
Yeah. So you might be unknowingly doing things that are totally blocking bile flow. Like if you're on birth control, like that could be the whole source of the reason why bile isn't flowing out, and then it could crystallize because the normal circulation of it's impaired. So Zineplex, which is a coffee suppository, which is like a little capsule that you stick up your butt, or a coffee enema, which is a kind of more aggressive way to get coffee exposed to the biliary pathway.
Drinking coffee does not do the same thing.
No. It's very different when it goes like up the rectum. Like it's a chemical action from the coffee on the cells of the biliary pathway that causes those capillaries, really, or I don't know if they're called capillaries or not, but causes the tubes of the biliary pathway to dilate more.
I like how Will all of a sudden goes into puberty when he's not sure what he's talking about.
Yeah,
and then he says it's very different than coffee. Yeah, it's different when you're putting something in your butt as opposed to drinking it.
Right. So the coffee enemas are like a really powerful way to do that. Sometimes we shy away from if your electrolytes are kind of unstable, like if you're already low electrolyte deficient, because they can kind of wash out some electrolytes, and some people feel like really out of it after coffee and because of that impact. So Zenoplex is a coffee suppository, doesn't have that effect of washing out electrolytes, but it's also not quite as strong as a coffee enema. So there's a trade-off. Whereas Beet Flow works more directly on the consistency of the bile itself. So when bile gets too sludgy or crystally, Beet Flow can really help break it down and make it more fluid. And it can become sludgy for different reasons. Sometimes you might not be processing cholesterol effectively, and it might be building
or consuming enough.
Or consuming enough of it. You also might have excess bilirubin in coming through your liver. Like if you have a catabolic imbalance and your cells are dying off really quick, that will result in more bilirubin, which is basically dead cell shrapnel that your liver processes out. It becomes part of bile and your body sends it out as normal, regular waste. But if you're in a catabolic imbalance, there might be a lot of bilirubin, and that excess bilirubin can change the consistency of the bile and make it more sludgy and crystally, so it won't flow as well.
Right, so it's going to thicken it up. And so just using Beet Flow may not be enough for you. You may have to take steps to improve that catabolic imbalance as well. And there could be a lot of other things going wrong too. So first of all, those are the two biggest steps that someone could take. And we talk about in our digestion course that's basically free, but with the new system that we have, it's actually 50 cents. So, because our new system requires a credit card to register, and the lowest amount we could put on it was 50 cents. So now our free course, it had a inflation.
50 cent course.
Yeah, it's 50 cents course. So that's kind of funny. But anyways, in that course, we teach how to do like a Beet Flow flush, which is a thing where someone will just take 4 Beet Flow capsules every 30 minutes for 2 hours. So it's like a short burst of a higher level of the Beet Flow, and it's kind of a boost to get things going better so that it can flow. So when somebody's really backed up to where they want to yank their gallbladder out, we see that if they do a Beet Flow flush on one day and then a coffee suppository the next day, that combination can be super effective. Mm-hmm. And maybe they need to do that combination a few times over a month period to really get it to move. But that's the thing that we seem to be the most effective. But there are other steps too, because like if something's raising estrogen levels, you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. And I would also encourage people, like if you really are in this severe case and it's not feeling to be like responsive, like I did a Beet Flow flush and it didn't work. Like,
right.
You can go to places like Gerson's Therapy, and they're doing like coffee enemas a couple times a day.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Everyone is.
That's like, real aggressive.
Yeah, it's just on it, you know, and that can be intense, but like it's also an option, you know, if someone's, you're under good supervision and they're helping you keep your electrolytes balanced, it might be a better thing than losing your gallbladder.
If you were like electrolyte excess, that might be awesome
it
for you.
It might be, yeah. But you know, you should definitely, if you're going to be something where it's that intense, you should definitely be with some help, some professional help.
Right. Estrogen. Okay.
Yeah. So estrogen, if you have elevated estrogen levels, that can stimulate constriction of like the normal tubes that the ovaries would drop through. So that's one way birth control works, is the egg doesn't drop. But those same type of cells are also present in the biliary pathway.
Right, so that's one option on some types of birth control, but there's also other types that are just raising estrogen levels, and it seems that the estrogen has the ability to thicken the bile just like the bilirubin would have.
Yeah, so that kind of brings me back to what I said earlier about like the poor cholesterol metabolism. So when our cells are making energy properly and our thyroid's running right, it uses up cholesterol. But when that can get inhibited, we can get hypercholesterolemia, where we're not using the cholesterol our body's naturally producing, and too much cholesterol can also alter the consistency of bile. So when we see anything that impedes regular cellular energy production and thyroid function, like elevated estrogen, elevated cortisol, polyunsaturated fats, all these things can cause alterations not only in cellular energy production and cell health, but also in the use and consistency of bile.
Right, so this is something else to think about, and then another really big one is that there's a lot of foods, especially processed, a lot of the grains, that seem to have the ability to thicken bile as well. So in our book, Kick Your Fat in the Nuts, in chapter 9, we have this like a 30-day clean sweep thing that you remove a lot of these trouble foods and see how things go. And we use this for a lot of different issues that a person might be dealing with. But if you're in a severe case like this and you need to be aggressive to help bile flow, you should take these steps. And it's so important that we even pulled the chapter out of the book and put it on kickitinthenuts.com. So you can go there and just in the search box, search for Remove the Trouble, or maybe Chapter 9. Search for either of those and you'll find that. And we do, it's a long post that explains the whole thing that you can go through to kind of see if those foods are causing the problem for you. And if you remove all of those and you're doing all these other steps, then a lot of people have the ability to turn it around.
Yeah, a lot of like proteins, like gluten's like usually singled out because it really does cause a lot of problems. But there's other complex fibers and...
And we know that it's not actually gluten always that's causing the problem, but it's other cofactors that are in these gluten-containing foods. So we just say gluten.
Sure. Yeah. Gluten and gluten-type molecules or proteins can cause a lot of inflammation. And that, again, can constrict the biliary pathway just purely mechanically through the inflammation, as well as its hormonal impact on like our production of bile.
Right.
All right, Susie, how will I know when I'm taking enough beet flow and bile is flowing properly? I am mineral deficient a la low blood pressure. I add sea salt to my meals. I eat salt and then drink water. Been taking beet flow since August. Did one flush and did another tonight. Been getting LPR symptoms, slight burning in throat and mucus and hoarseness. T3 quite low. Increased carbohydrates, winter squashes. I have polyuria, especially at night. I tend toward anabolic imbalance. I never see bile products on the urine dipstick. Specific gravity of urine is often 1.025, and urine pH tends to be 6.5 to 7. Breath rate is about 7. Breath hold is 2+ minutes. I've been following... Wow.
I said wow.
Oh. I've been following the guidelines as well as possible. Still have constipation, ridiculous stomach bloating. Before Kicking in the Nuts, I took HCL without knowing about beet flow and was squirting soup for days. Been underweight now for months. Don't want to take HCL without verifying good bile flow.
So we have a lot of stuff to talk about in here. So let's start off with a couple things. First of all, she says that she never sees bile products on her urine dipstick, meaning I guess she's talking about bilirubin and your bilinogen. So don't think that you're looking for those to be an indication that bile is flowing. When you see those on your dipstick, that's an indication that bile is flowing. It doesn't mean that it is. It's just usually if you see bilirubin or urobilinogen, that's a strong sign that bile is not flowing. So that's a good thing in your favor. And that's great to check, is using that 11-parameter dipstick to get an idea. Okay, let's just make sure it's not a really horrible situation. But what other signs would you look for, just as far as covering the bile part first, could give indication that bile may have improved flowing since taking the beet flow?
Well, I guess I'll list the normal indications of poor bile flow and then the opposite ones of good to organize it. So a low saliva pH, like if your saliva pH is under 6.6 or something, is it
6.5? We like to see it above that.
These are indications of poor bile flow. Light colored stool, so it's like cardboard color or lighter. It should be darker, like a forest floor. If you're feeling nauseous, especially after eating fats, if you're feeling gassy or bloated in your mid or lower abdomen, not so much your upper abdomen, that's more your stomach, but if you're like your mid or lower torso is feeling like bloated and gassy. Skin problems, itchiness also.
Breakouts, like, stuff like that.
Yeah, so acne, oily, blotchy skin, and pruritus, which is the itchiness that can be caused by bile refluxing. And like she pointed out, bilirubin or urobilinogen on a urine dipstick test.
Right, so that's a good thing. And you did the right thing by not adding HCL, especially since in the past it gave you a loose stool issue. But usually once someone has been using beet flow for even just a couple days, and especially if they've done a beet flow flush, I don't mind them trying out HCL and just starting slow, like we always recommend people do, and see how that goes. I think I even saw one of the coaches in the group was making that suggestion to Susie. And that's kind of how I do it too. And then if stool gets loose, then I know that they need to back off of that HCL before they can, they need to back off the HCL so that they can get bile flowing. And they know that they just need to be much more aggressive at getting bile to flow. But it sounds like a lot of what Susie's dealing with here with the extreme bloating, she's starting to have reflux symptoms. Like, we know all of those are issues of not enough HCL. So taking those steps to be able to use the HCL is going to turn around a lot of things for her in a big way. But we do have a lot of other stuff to talk about in here. She talks about having some thyroid issues, and her breath rate is 7. Do you want to explain why a low breath rate like that could cause a lot of problems with thyroid issues?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's related to, or like a sort of indicator of poor thyroid issues. So she already had her T3 levels checked, and there's a lot of different tests you can do through, like, Health Check USA has a whole thyroid panel, and it's not really that helpful to look at just one number, like T3 or TSH or T4. You got to look at everything together. But looking at your breath rate and your breath hold time, it kind of shows pretty easily, even without a lab test, that your body's not making enough CO2. Your bloodstream's leaning too alkaline, and that's an indication your cells are not really effectively metabolizing glucose, which would make more CO2 and cause you to breathe faster and also cause you to not be able to hold your breath as long. So it sounds like she knows those things are all kind of tied together. I would want to see those things improve, and I would also recommend, like, in the meantime, drinking carbonated water to help give more CO2 to your cells. It'll help reduce inflammation, help you feel more calm, probably feel more alert. And then I've seen people have really, really great success where you stay on the B-flow, keep your bile going well, maybe also do Zenoplex just to, like, ensure that it's working. And while you're doing that, take some of the antimicrobial agents that we like to use for clearing out the stomach. So, like you had mentioned, D-limonene, heartburn free, raw carrots, cooked bamboo, cooked mushrooms, Swedish bitters. Not the alkalizing ones, so I wouldn't use, like, the charcoal.
Was last week, I think.
Or Pepto-Bismol. But those other agents that we just mentioned could really help clear out the stomach and also give you a couple of days worth of time to keep boosting up your bile flow. Then slowly try to reintroduce HCL. And usually when people do the work of clearing out the bacteria in the stomach and their bile flow is going, then HCL tends to go pretty well for them.
Right, and she talks about constipation too. So one thing that you could look at is, okay, since I've been using BeatFlow, has my constipation gotten worse? And if it has, that can be a good sign as far as bile flow, because if bile starts to move better, it's going to make that stool a little more alkaline, so the stool is going to move a little bit slower and you're going to be a little bit more constipated. And that's a good sign that, hey, I could use some more HCL in here to make all that. Because an increased stomach acid level is going to improve a lot of cases of constipation if it's not just from the anabolic issue, which it sounds like that's a contributing factor for you for sure. But the first steps, you know, there's a lot of steps you could take here, but the first one would be, let's, you know, you could test out HCL, see how you do. If it gets really loose, you know for sure that's not where you want to be, but just start out slow. I mean, a person can even start out with a half a capsule if they want to be really cautious. You just open it up, dump half of it out, and take the half capsule worth. And that's a very gentle way to do that. Mm-hmm. Just keep in mind that if you're having slight reflux issues now, when you start at a low dose, that reflux pain could magnify because now you're adding more acid, but maybe it's not enough acid to trigger that valve to close. So that's important to know as you try to ramp up that HCL dose.
Yeah, and I would usually see, like, and if it does create, like, a big reaction even with just, like, one or two, I would say the heartburn free or D-limonene would be a definite good call to go with for a few days, even the full course of it. They usually come in, like, capsules of 10, I think, if you do the heartburn free, and just kill out that bacteria. Because when I've seen people do that, and then they go back to the HCL, like, oh, no problem now. and her saying she has like ridiculous stomach bloating, it's probable she has like a lot of bacteria in her intestine.
Right, and in a lot of cases when we want to be gentle with HCL at first, we might use apple cider vinegar instead of HCL. But since she's so anabolic and constipated, we probably wouldn't want to do that here because apple cider vinegar has the ability to push somebody more anabolic. And if she's plugged up, she could end up being more plugged up. So keep that in mind, too.
If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com.
Hey, that's our website, healthprocourse.com.
Yeah, it sure is. So we have another question. Celine Dion.
No. Right.
Curious as to what electrolyte insufficient people drink. I'm starting from 2 morning coffees, approximately 1 gallon of water until early evening, followed up with a tea in the evening.
Okay, so just don't do that. What else?
Did you make that one up? That's crazy.
No, that
that's
was
like
the group.
It's like if you wanted to like lower your electrolyte levels, right. That's what you would do.
Yeah. But you, and but I don't know that you would need to casually throw in a tea in the evening.
No,
too.
I know. You've already wiped yourself out.
Yeah, so I don't want, when you're measuring the amount of water that you're drinking in the day, I don't want the word gallon to be in there anywhere.
Yeah.
And not that a gallon of water per day is not beneficial for a lot of people. A ton of people will be really happy to be able to get that down. But if you're electrolyte deficient, then you just don't qualify to be that person yet. You need to work on getting some mineral levels up. So what could a person drink if they're not going to do a gallon of water?
They could do a protein shake. That would be cool. With
it would be delicious.
Bone salt broth? In it.
Yeah.
Especially if you used our complete protein powder.
For sure. Plug. Then you could also add like a pinch of salt or water with concentrated trace mineral drops to it. You could do a smoothie. But I would think like a protein shake with maybe a combination of those things, like a pinch of salt or trace mineral drops, maybe glutamine if you're not too anabolic, something to lift your blood pressure, add electrolytes, give you proteins, give you lower glycemic sugars, give you like fats that you can use for energy, like maybe coconut milk powder, something like that, something that has electrolytes and minerals and, you know,
some gumption.
Blackstrap molasses for some people.
That's okay. I like to see that more in like a stir fry or something because
it
I don't
taste awful.
You know, well, because yeah, it does taste a lot more when you use it in liquid, but also in the liquid form, those sugars in there can cause a spike and crash for some people, but it doesn't do as much if you do it in like a stir fry or something. But you know, I'm fine if somebody wants to flavor their water a little bit as long as they're not sweetening it, you know, with sugar or something like that. But
because like lemons or what? Like
sure,
lemon?
Why not? Or even some fruit or something. You know, there's a lot of things now, especially in the carbonated water aspect, where people sell flavored carbonated water that just has like a very small amount of fruit flavoring in them. I think one company was Hint. I can't think of the other one. Maybe even Zevia counts as one. Don't you drink
Arrowhead.
That sometimes?
I mean, I have like one of those soda streams at home.
Right,
so
right,
I carbonate
right.
my own, and then you can add like flavored liquid stevia or pinches of salt or trace mineral drops to that if you wanted really
right.
awesome water.
And so just remember that when you're looking at what you're drinking, carbonated water is great for someone who has a low breath rate or maybe they're balanced. But if your breath rate is like 29, like that lady last week, you don't want to add carbonated water to that. So keep that, be mindful of that. But, you know, just remember that water is important for a lot of things. So just because you're electrolyte deficient doesn't mean that you should cut out water. You still need water, but if you're drinking a gallon, I mean, you may be not actually electrolyte deficient. You may just be drowning in too much water for what's going on with your body. So maybe reducing that a little bit could fix a lot of things.
Replace that tea with bone broth.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Coffee in the morning.
Yeah, and bone broth is a great one for in any case.
It has water in it too.
Right, it's right in there, but then it comes with all this good stuff.
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm a fan of coffee for a lot of people, but if you're already electrolyte deficient and you just have coffee and no breakfast, like, that's kind of bad. Like,
right.
Because coffee, point. It speeds the rate at which you use carbohydrates. So if you're already low on your blood sugar and low on your electrolytes and then you drink coffee by itself, you're going to be really shaky, like, anxious mess.
Right, and it's also a diuretic, which is going to cause a person to pee out more mineral. Yeah. You know, so keep in mind what that means. That doesn't mean don't drink any coffee, but like Will said, you know, have some food with it when you're doing that, and maybe don't go too crazy with it.
All right. Betty from Grand Rapids, Michigan. What is the fastest way to fix the upside down urine and saliva pH problem?
Will, why don't you explain what that problem is?
Sure. I mean, we call it this inversion, and it's a big problem that can be caused by a lot of different things. Usually someone with an anabolic imbalance will tend to have a urine pH that's high, and then other people that have problems with bile flow will usually tend to have a lower saliva pH. So sometimes we see a combination of those things happening at the same time. And when it is flipped like that, it signals to us, like, it's a indication that the whole electric circuitry is off in the body. The positive and negative charges are kind of backwards within the bloodstream, and that needs to be fixed pronto.
It can really, so, for some, you know, not that we understand why it does in every case with every symptom, but just that issue, can we often see some pretty crazy symptoms going on. And when they flip and correct that inversion, that the symptom, a lot of them can go away.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of my closest friends are in med school, and I was talking about this, and they're like, oh, urine pH should never be higher than saliva pH. So even in mainstream medicine,
wow, that's pretty fancy.
He was like, that's horrible, right? So, but to answer Betty's question, we usually use a couple things, like vitamin B6, P5P is pretty typically recommended to help correct this inversion, where it lowers urine pH and raises saliva pH at the same time. Vitamin C as ascorbic acid is also very effective to push urine pH down. And beet flow is pretty helpful at raising saliva pH. So maybe a combination of those things.
Right. Maybe you don't need to be real aggressive with either one, but if you can get both of them to move in the right direction a little bit, all of a sudden the person is in the right situation. And remember that ascorbic acid is a fraction of vitamin C. So something like a whole food form of vitamin C, like Bio-C, like we use, or Camu-Camu or something, those things aren't going to lower urine pH like ascorbic acid will. But when you buy vitamin C at just about any store, the cheap junk vitamin C, usually it is ascorbic acid. You can look at the ingredients and it'll say vitamin C as ascorbic acid. And it's almost worthless as vitamin C, but it can be really effective at helping lower urine pH and correct this inversion that could be going on.
Mm-hmm. There's some other things they can also, like, that's going to be enough. Like, if they do those couple things, if you take enough vitamin C, it'll get it down. But if you wanted to be more, like, diet-based with it, you could use garlic to lower your urine pH. You could use hard-cooked eggs. I guess olive oil. It's not my first choice at all, but it would also help lower urine pH. And then if you are too anabolic, you could also use MSM, because that would also push you to be more catabolic and lower your urine pH.
Right. So there's a lot of varieties of things that you could use, but just know that that's a pretty important thing to straighten out. And if you lean that direction, you can keep an eye on that and know when you need to move things in the right direction to kind of help things move along. I think we did it.
We did it. We did it. Alrighty. If you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the free 4-week digestion course at kickitinthenuts.com.
50-cent digestion course.
50-cent digestion. It's actually, yeah, not free anymore. Or you can head on over to willsmybodyofknowledge.net. He's got lots of great blogs on there, articles, and exercises for you.
Bye-bye. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, the sun